Morning. Today's daf in Kedushin is Lamed Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf is Lamed Zech Nishmas Libik Ariel Bashmua. We are on Lamed Alamed Beis. We're addressing a very simple question today. It's going to take up most of today. The answer to this question, why are women exempt from time bound mitzvos? It is, when I say the Gemara's question is why, we're not looking for time bound mitzvot. The Gemara here is not really interested in giving a logical explanation, a reasonable explanation in terms of why should that be. The Gemara never addresses that question. Gemara is, I don't want to say not interested, but it's not the focus of the Gemara. The Gemara is interested in why, meaning drasha. What is the classic methodology that leads us to the conclusion that that women are exempt from time by mitzvahs? Where is that? Where can we find that in the Torah? So what we're going to be using is a lot of our classic methodology, which includes binyanav mishnei ksuvim. So we have basic ideas that when I have a precedent in the Torah, when the Torah sets forth a precedent, so from there we can uncover what would be the rule regarding any other mitzvahs that are similar to the binyanav, to the precedent that was set forward. So as of what we did yesterday, the basic answer to the question is tefillin. Tefillin is a mitzvah. It's a time bound mitzvah, although that very point is challengeable. And later this morning, we're going to challenge that very point. We're not going to challenge it, meaning it's a machlok. It's machlok is tanaim, whether or not the mitzvah of tefillin is time bound or not. For right now and for most of this morning, let us assume that the mitzvah of tefillin is a time bound mitzvah. We also know that women are exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. How do we know that? So that is based on the fact that the Torah juxtaposes the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of Talmud Torah two times, once in the first parsha of Kriya Shema, a second time in the second parsha of Kriya Shema. So now we know that we have a connection between Tefillin and Torah, and we know that by Torah, women are exempt from the mitzvah of Torah. That was already established earlier in this parak. So therefore, by putting those two pieces of information together, so therefore women are exempt from the mitzvah of Tefillin, and that sets forth the precedent that for Kol HaTorah Kula, women are going to be exempt from any time-bound mitzvah. That's the Gemara's answer up until this point in time. Yesterday, what we have been dealing with is that there are a couple of other places in the Torah where the Torah gives a special exclusion for women from various mitzvahs. Yesterday we talked about the mitzvah of sukkah. We talked about the mitzvah of re'iyah. Those are time-bound mitzvahs, and there's a special exclusion of the Torah, a miut, that excludes women. So why would we need one? Meaning if we have the binyanav and we have the precedent set forward that women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs, so then I shouldn't need an extra miut by sukkah. The Gemara says by sukkah stesher shivas yamim. So, and it says ha ezrach, right? Citizenship, and that excludes the women. So why do I need special miyot by sukkah? Why do I need a special miyot by the mitzvah of re'iyah, that by the regalim we have to go up to Yerushalayim and offer a carbon re'iyah, nolas re'iyah, and women are excluded from that because the Torah says zechurcha? Why do I need a special exclusion over there? So that is what we dealt with yesterday. Let us continue in the Gemara right where we left off yesterday. Vinel of Mehakel. Let us learn from Hakel. This is where we were. This is where we got to yesterday. Now, the mitzvah of Hakel is a time-bound mitzvah. It happens the year after the Shemitah. On Sukkot following Shemitah, we all get together, assemble in the Azara of the Beis Hamikdash, and the Melech is going to be reading to us from Sefer Devarim. Special mitzvah is Hakel. And the Torah goes out of its way to say that all are obligated in the mitzvah of Hakel, Anashim, Vinashim, Vitaf. Men, women, and children. Now, the Gemara says, so why don't we learn out from Hakel that women are obligated, meaning, and that should serve a binyanav, but of course leading us to the other conclusion that women should be obligated by time by mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, Mishum da'avi matzvah v'hakel shnei ksuvim v'baim ke'echad v'chol shnei ksuvim v'baim ke'echad em alamdim. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why, because hakel is not the only mitzvah that time by mitzvah that women are obligated in, so is the mitzvah of matzah, as we already discussed yesterday. The fact that the Torah by matzah puts together in the same pasuk the iser chametz and the mitzvah essay of eating matzah. So just like women are circumscribed by the iser chametz, so too they are also obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. So we have now shnei ksuvim v'baim ke'echad, and this is a basic rule that when the Torah gives me two case scenarios, so that means that's no longer a precedent, that's no longer a binyanav, but rather that's the yotzim and aklal. These are the exceptions to the rule. So that's the idea behind shnei ksuvim. Since I have matzah and hakel, so therefore they're no longer the rule, but rather the exception. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go on the other side. Let's go on the side of exemption. So what do we have now? Twice in the Torah, where that tells me that women are exempt from the mitzvah of... from time bound mitzvahs. One is tefillin. A second is re'iyah, where the Torah explicitly in both of those cases say that women are exempt. Now that should be shnei ksuvim habayim ke'echad, and therefore no longer setting a precedent. So tzricha. So here's what the Gemara is going about to argue. It's only shnei ksuvim if each pasuk could exist by itself. Then we're going to employ this idea of shnei ksuvim habayim ke'echad. However, if the two examples in the Torah need one another, meaning that one of them by themselves is going to be insufficient, and therefore they need one another, they no longer fall under the category of Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad. They basically are, it's like 1A and 1B, and it's not 1 and 2. Gemara over here illustrates. The Gemara said, "Tzricha di kas rechmanet tefillin v'lo kas v'riyah." So let's imagine the Torah only mentions by tefillin that women are exempt, and the Torah doesn't mention the mitzvah of riyah. Hav amina nail of riyah mehakel. I might have thought that we should have learned out the mitzvah of riyah from the mitzvah of hakel. Just like women are chayv in the mitzvah of hakel, women are chayv in the mitzvah of riyah. As I mentioned yesterday, thematically they are basically not the same, but they're very similar to one another. Let's go to Yerushalayim because the Torah tells us to go to Yerushalayim on certain occasions. So I might have thought that women are going to be... I know that women are obligated in Hakel, and if the Torah had not said anything by Riyah, I would have thought that they're obligated as well. Now let's go the other direction. What if the Torah would have written Riyah, but not the mitzvah of tefillin, and the women's exemption from tefillin? I would have thought that the hekesh between tefillin and mezuzah, meaning as we pointed out yesterday, in one of the parshios of Shema, tefillin and mezuzah are right next to one another. We know that women are obligated in the mitzvah of mezuzah, therefore women should be obligated in the mitzvah of tefillin. That's why the Torah has to go out of its way to tell me that women are exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. So tefillin and re'iyah are not 1 and 2, but rather 1a and 1b. And that's why that's not shnei ksuvim habayim ke'echad, and that's why they're not the exclusion, the exception, but rather the rule. So the Gemara says, what we just did by tefillin and re'iyah, we could also do by matzah and hakel. Meaning basically, we're going to look at matzah and hakel, not as 1 and 2, but as rather 1a and 1b. Ihachi matzah v'hakel nami tzricha, lamai tzricha. So the Gemara says, let's see, is this argument really true? That matzah and hakel are going to be 1a and 1b. So the Gemara says, look, I understand if the Torah would have written the woman's obligation by hakel but not by matzah, so then I totally would have understood that we would have arrived at the wrong conclusion. Well, we know, we talked about this yesterday, we have a gzeira shava connecting sukkahs and matzah. We know that women are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah, so therefore we would have concluded that women are exempt from the mitzvah of matzah had the Torah not gone out of its way to say that women are obligated. Now the Gemara says, but here's where it doesn't work. The Torah could have just simply written women's obligation by matzah, and the Torah would not have needed to have mentioned anything about women's obligation by hakel. Why? Anamina, because we would have said as follows. Here's how the Torah could have been written. Anashim v'taf. Men and children. And then the argument would have gone, v'anamina, tfeilim chayavim, nashim l'kol shekein. Well, if the children are obligated in the mitzvah of hakel, well, for sure the women are obligated in the mitzvah of hakel. Right? Children have no chayavim mitzvos. Women have mostly a chiyuv and mitzvah. So if children are obligated in hakel, so should women. So what comes out now is that we have shown that it is not a 1A, 1B. They don't need one another. Even if the Torah had not written hakel, we would have been fine. So therefore, no longer falls under this category of 1A, 1B. It is 1 and 2, and therefore, hilka chavlu bez ksuvim abayim kecha veim alamdim. Now that it's a 1 and a 2, therefore no longer serves as a binyan av, and that's why, at this point in time, we are good. Meaning right now what the Gemara is proposing is that the source that women are exempt from time by mitzvahs is that because even though the Torah says it twice that they are exempt, once by tefillin, the other one by riyah, that's not a 1 and 2, it's a 1A and 1B. Masha'enkin, on the other side, the two examples where the Torah says that women are obligated, that's not a 1A, 1B, but that's rather a 1 and a 2. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, but just to throw in a bit of a monkey wrench into this systemic answer of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, not everyone's on board with this idea that if there are two examples in the Torah, they are not considered a binyanav. There are those Tanaim, and later on we'll introduce ourselves to who they are, but there are Tanaim who are of the opinion that even if it's Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, Milamdin, it serves as a precedent. And so therefore, if you subscribe to that viewpoint, you're kind of stuck. Two examples where women are exempt, that are explicit in the Torah. Two examples where women are obligated, which are explicit in the Torah. So now, how do you know how to conclude? Visu, and the Gemara says, and furthermore, mitzvah says, Shishlo Azman Grama. Let's go to the other side, and that is non-time bar mitzvahs, where we know Nashim Chayavas, and we know that women are obligated. Minalan. So the Gemara says, now where does that coming from? Meaning, what sets the precedent that teaches us that women in general are obligated in non-time bar mitzvahs? The Aleph Mimorah. So the Gemara says, well, I think I know the answer. It comes from the idea that we learned earlier in our perek that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Kibud Av V'Em and Yiras Av V'Em. The Torah says, we saw the pasuk a couple days ago, being darshan by the Gemara, Ish Imo V'Aviv Tira'u. And we learn from the word Tira'u that both men and women are obligated in this mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em and Yiras Av V'Em. And so therefore the Torah there explicitly mentions women are obligated, and that now serves as a binyan av. So the Gemara says, Ma'amor Nashim Chayavas Av Kol Mitzvah Sesei Shlo Azman Grama Nashim Chayavas. So the Gemara says, well, shouldn't that set the precedent? So the Gemara says, well, yes, but Ne'elef Mitamu Torah. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have something called Talmud Torah, where we know, again, it's been established that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and since women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and it is a non-time bound mitzvah, maybe that should set the precedent that women are going to be exempt from non-time bound mitzvahs. So, basically, we're kind of at an impasse right now. Basically, the Gemara has thrown out two questions, and both seemingly unanswerable. Number one, if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Shnei Ksuvim Malamdin, so now we don't have a source. Two, on the other side of Mitzvah's essay, Shelo Azman Grama, non-time bound mitzvahs, where's the source for that? I have one place in the Torah that says women are obligated. I have another place in the Torah that says women are exempt. So now, basically, the Gemara says, we're kind of stuck. Mishum Davle Tamatara, period of Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ke'echa, V'chol Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ke'echa, Malamdim. So the Gemara says, well, what we could argue now is that on the second question of non-time by mitzvahs, well, you know there are two examples in the Torah where women are exempt from non-time by mitzvahs. One, the mitzvah of Tamatara. Two, the mitzvah period of Virivya, where women are exempt. It's a non-time by mitzvah, and women are exempt. So now I have two examples of non-time bound mitzvahs where women are exempt, so that's Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ke'echad, and therefore Ein Malamdin. Now, already you know that this answer the Gemara just proposed is a limited answer, because even though it addressed question number two, but if you go back to question number one, you know what's coming. Meaning, that's two examples, but there are opinions out there who say that you can learn from two examples. So, you know that's coming. Let's put that on the back burner for now. So the Gemara says, and even if we don't ask that question, which we will, well, the Rav Yochanan ben Broka Damar al Shneihem, who Omer Vayivarech Osam Elokim Peru Urevu, my Ikal Meimar. The Gemara says, and this is back, takes us back to Yevamos. And we saw this in Gittin as well. But this takes us back to Yevamos, where the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Broka is that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Peru Urevu. So now that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Peru Urevu, so now, strike that one from the record. Meaning now we only have one mitzvah that women are exempt from when it comes to time-bound mitzvah. I'm sorry, non-time-bound mitzvahs. And so, it's now one versus one. One mitzvah where the Torah is explicit that they're obligated, the mitzvah of Mora, fearing your parents. One mitzvah in the Torah where women are exempt, where the Torah is more explicit, Talmud Torah, but one's telling us they're obligated, the other one's telling us they're exempt. And according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, the mitzvah per revu, that's off the table. So the Gemara says, so now what? So Michael Amem, Mishum Dahavi, Talmud Torah, Upijan Aben, Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ke'echad. So the Gemara says, well, I can still say two mitzvahs where it is non-time bound and women are going to be exempt. Number one, Talmud Torah. Number two, Pidgin HaBen. Now, Pidgin HaBen, as we discussed earlier, women are exempt from that. The Gemara earlier already cited the drushas, how we know that. So, and Pidgin HaBen is a non-time bar mitzvah. It's certainly not calendarically linked. And even though, yes, you can't be poed to your son until after he's 30 days of age, but still, after 30 days of age, you're not bound by any time whatsoever in terms of when you're going to do the mitzvah of Pidgin HaBen. It's a non-time bar mitzvah. So here we have two examples. Ula Rav Yochanan Broka Nami Navi Piriv Rav Yomar Shneksuvam Baim Kachavei Amalamdin. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, and I know this is complicated. I know now. The Gemara is basically juggling. The Gemara now is juggling all these mitzvahs and basically trying to see what, given the number of mitzvahs where the Torah is explicit about whether women are obligated, women are exempt. So the Gemara now is basically doing a juggling act. So here now the Gemara says, now according to Rav Yochanan and Broka, we have two non-time bound mitzvahs where women are obligated. So that should lead us to the conclusion that since there are two, so therefore they're not the rule, but rather the exception. So the Gemara says, so what are you going to say about that? According to Rav Yochanan and Broka, what are the two mitzvahs? One, the mitzvah of Mora, which everyone agrees, women are obligated. And two, the mitzvah of Peruvu, which according to Rav Yochanan and Broka, women are obligated. So now those are two examples of non-time bound mitzvahs that women are obligated. That now no longer serves as a rule, but rather now an exception. So the Gemara said Tzricha. So here we go back to this argument of, well, these two are not one and two, but rather 1A, 1B. They need each other, they complement each other. The Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says, because if the Torah had not mentioned anything by the specific mitzvah that women are obligated in the mitzvah peruvu, meaning, again, this is all addressing the opinion of Yochanan ben Broka. Had the Torah not mentioned it, I would have thought that the reason that if in the absence of the Torah going out of its way and telling us, I would have said that women are exempt from the mitzvah peruvu, because the Torah links the mitzvah peruvu to the conquering of the world, and men conquer, women don't conquer. So that's why I would have thought, which parenthetically, by the way, is the reason why the Chachamim argue with Rav Yochanan ben Broka, and the reason why the halacha is that women are not obligated in the mitzvah peruvu. So, according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, in the absence of the Torah not telling us that women are obligated, I would have thought that women are exempt. So that's why the Torah has to go out of its way to tell me, "Vayivarech osam Elokim," that they're both obligated. Because the period of Riviya v'lo kasav mara. Now, had the Torah written period of Riviya, and the Torah did not write the mitzvah that women are obligated in the fearing of their parents, have amin ishta sipik biadolasos in. I would have thought that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of fearing their parents. Because as we discussed earlier, once a woman gets married, her obligation to fear and honor her parents takes a back seat to her obligation of addressing her husband. So I would have thought that since anyway she is not fully bound and committed to this mitzvah, maybe I would have thought the mitzvah doesn't even get off the ground. The Kevin Dain Sipak Biadalasoslo Tischayev Klal. The Gemara spells out this Havamina exactly like that. Since we know that she's going to enter a stage later in life where she is not going to be primarily obligated in the mitzvah of honoring her parents, so therefore, I might have thought that the mitzvah doesn't even get off the ground. That's why, Tzricha. So that's why you need it. So now the Gemara basically says, so even within this construct, and even within the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Broka, we could still make the argument that the two mitzvahs that tell us that women are obligated are not one and two, but rather 1A and 1B. They complement each other, and therefore it's not Shnei Ksuvim Mabayim Ke'echad. Says the Gemara, and I told you it was coming, and here it is. The Gemara says, okay, but all this works, and it's only going to work if your assumption, your starting point is that when I have Shnei Ksuvim, it's not the rule, it's the exception. However, there are Tanaim who are of the opinion that Shnei Ksuvim Baim Ke'echad Melamdin. And so now, we are basically back at the starting point of the whole discussion. Because as we have now addressed, there are, according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, two mitzvahs in the Torah that teach us that by non-time mitzvahs, women are exempt. Even if you don't subscribe to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, there are still two mitzvahs in the Torah where women are exempt. And if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Melamdin, So then that leads you to the conclusion that that's not the exception, that's going to be the rule. And therefore, women should be exempt. And we know, we just know it's not the right conclusion. Meaning, throughout this entire Gemara, we know what the conclusion needs to be. That's not the point. The only point the Gemara now is trying to know is methodology. How do we get to that conclusion? And right now the Gemara is struggling because we want to satisfy every opinion. And if you subscribe to the opinion of Sheikh Suvim, Abayim Ke'achad, Milamdin, so now, where do we go? How do we know that women are? What is the source that teaches us that women are exempt from non-time bar mitzvahs? And conversely, how do we know that they're obligated? Sorry. How do I know that women are exempt from time bar mitzvahs? And how do I know that women are obligated from non-time bar mitzvahs? Michael Amimra. Amarava. So basically now the Gemara is starting a new chapter approach to this entire dilemma. Meaning we're going to basically not totally dismiss everything we set up until now, but this is going to be a new strategy and it's going to be a new approach. And this is, if you want, you can like mark off the Gemara over here as round two of this discussion. Papunai Yadai Leilatama. So I'm going to go to Papunai. Right, I thought it was a place in Spain, northern Spain. So the not there. I mean, yes, Spain, but not there. But Rashi over here points out that Papunai is a reference to Rav Acha bar Yaakov. He lived in Papuna. The quotes of Gemara, Rashi quotes of Gemara Baba Basra that teaches us so. Either way, so Rava says, I'm going to go to Rav Acha bar Yaakov and I'm going to use his drasha, and it's going to answer our question. So Yadil Tami da Hamilso Umanu Ravacha Bayakov, the Gemara identifies it. So Amakra, Vayalachala Os Ayadcha Ulizikaron Bene Necha, Lamantia Taras Hashem Bificha. Okay. Final Parsha, final Pasuk in Parsha's bow. The Torah, this is the first mention in the Torah. First mention in the Torah of the mitzvah of Tefillin. And the Torah, it's right after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right after Yetzias Mitzrayim, right after Karban Pesach. So the Torah says that you're going to have an os on your hand and a zikaron in your eyes, meaning the mitzvah of tefillin. And then the Torah says, Laman tiyeh Torah Hashem beficha. So that Torah Hashem should be in your mouth. So in this pasuk, what do we have? Two concepts. One, tefillin. Two, Torah. Hukshu kol haTorah kula l'tefillin. And here, basically, what the Torah is doing is saying the following. You see tefillin, amplify it to the rest of the Torah. And if you take a look at Rashi, well, before Rashi, let me just finish the sentence of the Gemara. Ma tefillin mitzvah sesei shazman grama v'nashim peturos. And just like the mitzvah of tefillin is a positive commandment, and women are exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. And again, that's an assumption throughout the entire Gemara. That women are exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin, that goes back to yesterday's daf. But we know that. And once we know that, and once this pasuk basically says, take tefillin and amplify to kol haTorah kula, I've called mitzvah seseh, shazman grama, nashim peturos. So too, when it comes to time bound mitzvahs, women are going to be exempt. Umid mitzvahs eseh, shazman grama, nashim peturos. And now that we know where the exemption exists, mechlal de mitzvah seseh, shazman grama, nashim chayavos. So now the rest of the positive commandments in the Torah, which are, as we pointed out yesterday, the majority of the positive commandments of the Torah, the non-time bound mitzvahs, so therefore women are going to be obligated in the rest. Okay, 2 points. Number one, in this now new approach of the Gemara, basically we're starting with a totally new assumption. Meaning, the Gemara, and this is always a tricky part about Gemara, is that where did the assumption start? What is your starting point of the discussion? So previously, it's hard to say. Because previously we were just basically throwing around binyanav. There's a precedent, there's two, maybe it's not two, maybe it's 1A, 1B. It's always hard to say exactly what the starting point of the assumption is. Now, as the Gemara is giving us this approach of Rava, which he credits Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, we're going to go into this discussion with an assumption. And that is, women are obligated. Meaning, that's the starting point of the discussion. Women are obligated in positive commandments. Start there. Now that we start there, so what are you going to do once that's your starting point? The only thing you're going to do is talk about what the exemptions are going to be. Meaning, because we know the starting point of the discussion is they're obligated. And now we're just going to peel back the exemptions. And that's essentially what Rav is teaching us in the name of Rav Acha bar Yaakov. That here we have a starting point of they are obligated. Oh, but wait. Look at the end of Parshas Bo, where the Torah talks about the mitzvah of tefillin. And it tells us to amplify it. Well, wait one second. The starting point is, the assumption is that women are obligated. Okay, so we have tefillin, we know that they're exempt. We're going to amplify it a little bit, but we can't take it to the rest of positive commandments of the Torah, because again, that would then take away our entire assumption. Our assumption is that they're obligated. So what we're going to do is that we're going to look at the mitzvah of tefillin, look at the nature of the mitzvah of tefillin, and that's the only thing that's going to be shaved off from the positive commandments. The mitzvah of tefillin is time-bound. So any other time-bound mitzvah, which again, as we pointed out yesterday, is a couple dozen, right? I don't have a specific number, but it represents a small representation of the entire positive commandments of the Torah. And those are going to be the ones that women are going to be exempt from. But the starting point is, the assumption going in is, but the rest, obviously, they're going to be obligated. That's the, it's a total change, it's a mind shift in terms of what we've been doing up until now versus what the Gemara is doing right now. So, Hanicha, back to the Gemara. Right in the middle of Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says, so far it seems good. Meaning, in this new approach of Rav Acha bar Yaakov, it seems like we have something to work with. But Hanicha Lamandam, Tefillin Mitzvah Seseh Shazman Grama. Elamandam, Tefillin Mitzvah Seseh Shazman Grama, Mai Ika Lamemar. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. This approach is a good approach. It's a new approach. It's a new assumption. It's a shift. But the Gemara says, but not everyone is in agreement with this idea that tefillin is a time-bound mitzvah. There are tanaim. Now, we don't subscribe to their viewpoints, la halacha. But again, we are looking to satisfy everyone's opinion in terms of how we know this conclusion is correct. There are tanaim who are out there who say that the mitzvah of tefillin is not time-bound. And now, if that's true, meaning it is true, but according to these tanaim, what then becomes the source in the Torah that women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs? Take tefillin off the table. Tefillin, according to these tanaim, are not time-bound. So, man shamas le'dam tefillin mitzvah eseh shlo azman grama Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, well, let's be specific. Who's of the opinion that tefillin is not a time-bound mitzvah? So the Gemara says, we know. We're going to identify it as Rav Meir. V'savla shneksiv ambayim ke'achad, v'chol shneksiv ambayim ke'achad, ein malamdin. So the Gemara says, but we also happen to know that Rav Meir, we cross-reference Rav Meir, and we know that Rav Meir is of the opinion that when the Torah gives us shneksiv ambayim ke'achad, ein malamdin. So that means, basically, that Rav Meir, we could throw him back to the former discussion of the Gemara, meaning the precedent discussion of the Gemara. Kasavecha, Shnei Suvim. Now, we only went to the new approach of Rav Acha bar Yaakov because of those who are of the opinion that Shnei Suvim Abayim Ke'achad Melamdin. But the Gemara says for Rav Meir, he subscribes to the viewpoint of Ein Melamdin. So basically, put him back in the previous discussion of the Gemara. And therefore, we could satisfy his viewpoint. The Gemara says, Ula Rav Yehuda Damar Shnei Suvim Abayim Ke'achad Melamdin. So the Gemara says there's one Tana left out there where we're going to be in a bit of a jam. And that is the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda first holds that Shneksuvim Baim Ke'achad Milamdin. Two case studies in the Torah create a precedent. And it also happens to be that according to Rav Yehuda, Tefillin is not a time-bound mitzvah. So now, according to Rav Yehuda, the first approach of this morning is not going to work out. The second approach of Rav Acha bar Yaakov is also not going to work out. And so now, according to Rav Yehuda, where do we go? It's the last loose end that needs to be tied up on this entire discussion.
Rav Yehuda also, because the Chassidim says it's one A and one B because of that.
So basically, the Gemara is going to give a very similar approach. Mishum dehave matzah, simcha, v'hakel, shlosh ha'ksuvim b'am ke'echad. U'shlosh ha'ksuvim b'am ke'echad, em alamdin. So the Gemara says that according to Rav Yehuda, we're going to find, not two, but three places in the Torah that tells us that women are obligated in time-bound mitzvahs. Now, even if you subscribe to the viewpoint which Rav Yehuda does, of shnei ksuvim abayim ke'echad, milamdin, but when it's shlosha ksuvim, then everybody, even Rav Yehuda, is in agreement that that cannot set a precedent. These are the exceptions, and those are specifically the mitzvahs of matzah, simcha, and hakel. Now, Rashi points out, if you remember yesterday's daf, Rashi points out that insertion of simcha over here is a little bit of a cheat. I hope I'm saying it reverentially. Forgive me if I don't. But if it's a little bit of a cheat. Because remember, yesterday we tried to bring up Simcha as a case study of a positive, a time-bound positive commandment, which women are obligated. And if you remember yesterday's daf, what did we say yesterday's daf regarding the mitzvah of Simcha? It's not her mitzvah. It's not fundamentally her mitzvah. It's the husband's mitzvah, and he's the one required to make his wife happy on Yontif. By including her in Bizman Beis HaMikdash, the Karban, and post Beis HaMikdash by providing her gifts before Yontif.
But are you just following that, or following?
So Rashi over here says that's very good. So Rashi over here says that for the Gemara to have said what it just said over here, that according to Rav Yehuda it's three mitzvahs, and he counts Simcha as one of the three mitzvahs. So what Rav Yehuda is what the Gemara is doing is that it's making an assumption that Rav Yehuda does not agree with what the Gemara said in yesterday's daf. Meaning yesterday's daf, the Gemara said Simcha is off the table because it's not fundamentally her mitzvah; it's the husband's mitzvah. So Rashi over here writes that in order to allow us to make this point, so you have to say that the Gemara here is Gemara is arguing with yesterday's Gemara.
What about the case of the widow?
Right. Okay. No, the reason why the Gemara argued it yesterday is because of the widow. So, and the Gemara says that the widow had a sponsor for her. Okay. Anyway, that's what Rashi says. You have to say that. Otherwise you kind of get stuck between yesterday's daf and today's daf. Okay. So, I mean, right. You have to say that. Okay. And that's it. And that, right, that is like such a perfect illustration of the Gemara, like juggling every opinion, seeing how it can all work. It's a puzzle. I know it's complicated, but it's beautiful because basically there are a lot of pieces that it's not a perfect puzzle. Not every piece has a perfect place to be fit, and the Gemara does its best in terms of trying to see, can this go with this? Can this go with this? How is he going to address it? And it's dynamics at its best.
So since Rabbi Yehuda trumps to be mayor, in this case, is he ruled by him?
I don't know. Again, all this was addressing the question of how do we know? We know the conclusion, and it's just a question of how do we get to the conclusion. Okay. Chomitzos lo sase, here we go now, and this is the second half of the Mishnah's point. When it comes to Mitzvos lo sase, Isurim, prohibitions in the Torah, 365 in total. How do I know women are bound by all of them? They must subscribe to all of them. Now, I don't really mean all of them, because if you remember the Mishnah that we did now, almost a week ago, the Mishnah taught us that there are three exceptions to that rule, which actually we're going to be addressing later this morning. So, well, let's not say all of them, but let's say most all of them. The women are bound by them, and the Gemara's question now is a very simple one. We know the conclusion, mina hanimili. What brought us to this conclusion? So here the Gemara is going to cite not one, not two, but three separate sources, and the Gemara later on, of course, is going to ask the question, why do I need three sources? But let's first go through the three sources. So if a man or a woman were to do any of the sins, so first of all, in terms of punishments, the Torah says they are on equal footing. Meaning, if a man or a woman violate any of these terms in the Torah, so they're on equal footing in terms of onshim, in terms of punishments. So that is one source. Number two, Debei Rabbi Elazar Tana Amakra Asher Tasim Lifnehem. Right? Ela Mashpatim. Right? The opening pasuk of Parshas Mishpatim. Ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. These are the laws that you're going to put in front of them. Now, Parshas Mishpatim is primarily related to the dinim of the Torah, the monetary laws of the Torah. So, Tasim Lifnehem. You're going to put it in front of them. So that's the second source saying that they're on equal footing when it comes to monetary law. And finally, if you were to kill a man or a woman, this also found in Parshas Mishpatim, is in reference to a shur hamuad of yours killing another person. Where the Torah says, you are kind of chai of misa, even though you didn't commit murder, but you had an animal which was a reputed animal to have killed before, and your animal killed somebody, this is the case in the Torah where you can pay your way out of your quote-unquote death penalty. It's called kofar. Vehemis isha isha, and there the Torah goes out of its way to say that your obligation to pay kofar is going to be irrespective of whether or not your animal killed a man or killed a woman. And therefore men and women are equated in regards to this kofar payment. Now, correct. That's the only point the Gemara is making. Meaning, in term, we're not talking about them being the murderer. We're talking about them being the victim. Absolutely correct.
So, then how do we learn that? We try to learn that women are Yahweh's and Mrs.
Loisas. Right.
How do you see
that? It's one. No disagreement. It's one aspect of this point, which is that they're equated in this regard. Meaning, it's a. You're right. This is. This drasha still needs drashas one and two. Now, utzricha, and that's the Gemara's next point. Utzricha, and the Gemara says that all three of these drashas are necessary. Here's what I would have thought. Meaning, basically, what is the necessity of all three of these drashas? Because the Gemara assumes they're not to the exclusion of one another. They complement one another, and why? So let's start off with number one. Number one. Men and women get an onesh. The Gemara says, yeah, of course. Meaning, well, so we say of course. Well, the purpose of an onesh is kapara. Right? A separate discussion. Whether or not onesh is there for the kapara, or is it there, so kol Yisrael yishmo v'yiro. Right? Basically to warn other people. And there's a dual nature to the punishment. But in this case, the Gemara says it very clearly. The purpose of punishment is kapara. To provide atonement. So, I would have said, if I only had one that men and women are equated for when it comes to onshim, I would have said, yeah. Who wouldn't want a kapara? Everyone wants a kapara. So, avaldina meima ish debar maso matan in isha lo. But if I didn't have the elam ashpatim asher tasim lefneham, I might have thought that women do not subscribe to the various laws, the various monetary laws. Men are generally in the business world. Women are generally not in the business world. I'm not making social commentary, just simply saying what the assumption of the Gemara is. So, v'iyashminan ha-misham d'chiyusa hi. Now, even if all I had two, it was number two, yeah, I would have thought, okay, but if necessary, women need a livelihood, so they'll be on the business world. So, therefore the Torah binds them as well to all the monetary law. Ava kofer, but when it comes to the parsha of kofer, ema ish debar mitzvah in isha lo. So the Gemara has the havamin over here that maybe I would have thought that only kofar is in the event that your animal killed a man, not a woman. The isham in and hamisham deika ibn neshama. Now, if all I had was number three, I would have said sure. Men and women have neshamas, so that's ibn neshama. That's the loss of a neshama. Chasrach meni Allah. So therefore, they have to pay kofar. Ava hanach tarte emalo. But if I only had the first two, so then I might have thought no. So tzricha. So basically, the Gemara provides an argument why these three drashas are not to the exclusion of one another, but rather complementary to one another. Okay. And for the rest of today's daf, we are going to be discussing now the exceptions to this rule. Women are bound by all the Isurim in the Torah, barring three. The three that are excluded are Baal Takif, Baal Tashchis, and Baal Tatam Lemesim. So let's go over each one. Bishlam about the Tamil Mesim Dikhziv Amor Lakonim B'nei Aaron B'nei Aaron V'lo B'nos Aaron. Now I know the Gemara is going out of order, meaning the Mishnah starts off with Baal Takif, then goes to Baal Tashchis, then goes to Baal Tatam Lemesim. And the Gemara first picks up on Baal Tatam Lemesim, that a Bas Kohen can come into contact with Tumas Meis. So why would the Gemara start here in terms of a source? And the Gemara, and the answer is because it's the easiest. Meaning the Torah says, Daber el Kohanim b'nei Aharon. B'nei Aharon v'lo b'nos Aharon. So when the Torah introduces us to this law that a Kohen cannot come into contact with Tumas Meis, so it opens up with the words b'nei Aharon. So, Ella, Baal Takif or Baal Tashchis minalan. But how do I know that women are not bound by the Isser of Baltakev Baltashchis. Let's just quickly review. We did this back in the Mishnah, but just to review. The Isser Baltakev is cutting off the corners of your head. Sideburns. Right? You cannot destroy your sideburns. Not with a razor, not with scissors, although that point is not totally unilateral, but that's let's say it nice and simple as far as the halacha is concerned. You can't cut off your sideburns, not with a razor, not with scissors. So that's the Isser Baltakev, and the Isser Baltashchis is using a razor to cut off your beard, the corners of your face. So we have now two Isurim in the Torah that don't apply to women, and the Gemara's question over here, a really simple one, well, how do I know that? Dichsiv, lo sakifa pas rosh shechem, v'lo sashchis es pas zikanecha. So the Torah, in the same pasuk, puts together these two Isurim, the destruction of sideburns and the cutting off of your beard, the shaving off of your beard. Now, kol she'eshna ba'ashchati, eshna ba'kafa. Now, anyone who is included in one is going to be included in the other. The hananeshei, hovelo isnu ba'ashchata, lefnu ba'kafa. Well, since women are not included in the isser of shaving their beard, they're also not going to be included in the isser of cutting off the sideburns. Now, ominalan dolo isnu ba'ashchata. So, obviously, if you're going to make an assumption, you have to explain the assumption. Well, how do I know that women are not included in hashchasas zikan, the shaving off of their beard? So the Gemara says we can do this in one of two ways. First of all, we could say asvara daha lo is lehu zikan. Well, they don't have a beard. Now it's kind of funny because if they don't have a beard, so then of course there's no issue because they don't have a beard. And well, if they are growing hair on their face, so then you lose the argument. So obviously what the Gemara means is that they generally don't have a beard. And since they generally don't have a beard, so therefore you can't expect that the Torah is going to provide an Isser for them on something they don't generally have. So since they generally don't have a beard, so therefore they're not bound by this Isser. And if they happen to have facial hair, so then they can shave it off. But that just brings us to the point that they're not bound by that Isser in the Torah. Since they're not bound by that Isser in the Torah, and the Torah in the same pasuk puts the Isser of Hashchatas Zikan and Hakafas Arosh, so since they're not bound by the shaving of the beard, they're also not bound by the cutting off of the sideburns.
But they do have sideburns.
Huh? No, that's exactly the point. Meaning, despite the fact that they have sideburns, but they're allowed to round it off. Because since they're excluded from Hashchatas Zikan, so they're all for...
But the presumption was, the first one doesn't claim, but the second one does, so...
But since they're in the same pasuk together, and since they're exempt from one, they're also going to be exempt from the other. That's the argument. Yes. Now, now the Gemara says, now that was a svara, and the Gemara says, and we can also do this by way of drasha. You'll notice in the pasuk that it goes from Rosh Hashem to Zikanecha, right? That's not an agreement of conjugation. Midashani kra b'dibure, the fact that the Torah clearly shifted, going from Rosh Hashem to Zikanecha. De'imkein nichtav rechmana pa'az zikanchem. My Zikanecha. Why did it shift from what should have been Zikanchem? Zikanchem would have been a great agreement with the beginning of the pasuk of Roshachem, and it shifted to Zikanecha. My Zikanecha, Zikanecha v'lo Zikanishtecha. So Zikanecha means your beard, meaning to the exclusion of your wife's beard. That's a drasha, meaning the fact that the Torah clearly went out of its way to shift in grammar. V'lo, the Gemara says, V'atanya Zikanisha v'asrisha alu se'ar hare hein kizakan l'chol divrayem. The Gemara says, okay, but what are we going to do with this brisa? This brisa says, the beard of a woman and that of a sris that has hair growing in it is like a beard for all matters. Meaning, the brisa over here says, halachically, that's beard hair. So the Gemara says, now what are we going to do with that brisa? My love l'ashchasa. Now, isn't the brisa over here contextually talking about the idea that you're not allowed to shave it off? Isn't that what the brisa is saying? Now again, we know that's not the conclusion, because our Mishnah, which certainly is going to trump a brisa, is saying that women are not bound by this sister. But basically what the Gemara wants to know is, what are we going to do with this braisa? So Amar Abaye Lashchas Dolamatzit Samarti Olaf Pas Paas Mibnei Aaron Malahala Nashim Peturus Afkan Nashim Peturus. So the Gemara says, no, we're not going to do that, because the Torah mentions the corners of your face by Kohanim. The Torah mentions the corners of your face by the rest of us. And just like women are exempt, just like the Benos Aaron are exempt, so too the rest of us are exempt as well. Meaning, we know that women are not bound by the sister. Wait, give me a moment. Let me just finish this. The Isvir Lan Dechi Kasa Bnei Aaron Akule Nyanaksev Nishto Kramine V'Taisa B'Kavachomer. So the Gemara says now, the idea that Bnei Aaron is going on the entire parsha, well then the Gemara says the Torah didn't have to say anything, and we could have deduced it through a kavachomer v'anamina, and the kavachomer would have gone like this: Oma Kohanim Shiriba Bemakas of Mitzvos Yiseros, just like by Kohanim who have extra mitzvos, and Bnei Aaron v'lo Benos Aaron, meaning they are on a higher plane, they are bound by more mitzvos, and yet the Benos Aaron are exempt from this Isser in the Torah. So for the rest of us, Yisrael, lo kol shekein. So for the rest of us, they are for sure going to be exempt from this Isser. So Elav Gzereshava, Hamamina, Hifzika Inyan. The Gemara says, but I'll tell you why the Gzereshava is still necessary. Even though the Kavachomer seems to be a flawless Kavachomer. The Gemara says, Gzereshava is necessary because, Hifzika Inyan. Because after saying Bnei Aaron, to the exclusion of Benos Aaron, the Torah doesn't then seamlessly transition into a discussion of Pas Roshchem and Hashchata Sazakan. So that's why the Gzer Shav is necessary. Hashtinami Neima Hivzika Inyan. So the Gemara says, well, once there's Hafsaka Sa'inyan, once there was a break in the action, so then I would have said also as well that there should have been a break in the action. The Imishim Gzereshava, then the Gemara says, now if it's just for the Gzereshava alone, the Gemara says, that's not going to be good enough. Mi Ba'ilei Lechidatanya. Lo Yigachu, what we're about to do right now is going to be the source that teaches us in what means are you not allowed to remove the beard. What if I cut off my beard? I cut off my beard with scissors, or I use strange tools like a plane. Like a carpenter's plane. It sounds terrible. But I might have thought, Yechayv Tamalam, Alo Yigalechu. The Torah says, don't shave. Haketa Giluch Sheyesh Ba'ashchata. We're looking for the kind of shave where basically it destroys, meaning the closest thing that comes to your face, which is Havayom Zetar. That's a razor. So basically, I now have used this pasuk, I utilize this pasuk to teach me the idea that the Isser of shaving specifically, shaving your beard, is specifically with the razor. Im Kein Nichtu of Kra, Etshib Zikanecha, my Pa'as Zikanecha. The Torah didn't have to use the word Pa'as. It could have just simply said, that which is on your beard. The fact that the Torah says the word Pa'as, Shema Min Atarte. So that comes to teach me two things. Number one, that the Isser of shaving is limited only to a razor. Scissors or other implements, other tools would be fine. And two, the Pa'as Pa'as of Zereshava teaches me that just like the Benos Aaron are going to be exempt from this Isser in the Torah, the rest of us also are going to be exempt from this Isser in the Torah. Okay, let's just quickly wrap it up. And we'll pause over here. Obviously we have to finish the daf, but there's still one loose end we need to tie up, and that is, what are we going to do with that braisa? That braisa taught us that when the woman grows a hair on her face, that has a halachic status of a beard. What is that braisa talking about? I mean, the answer is tomorrow's parsha. So actually, last week's parsha. But, okay. In other words, Saras. Give me a moment. Okay, so let's quickly summarize. We finished the Gemara's question of how do I know that women are exempt from time by mitzvahs? And basically, the way I have the Gemara organized in my head is that there basically are two approaches. Either approach one, which is the Binyanov approach, looking at the precedence of the Torah, but then you have to juggle the opinions of Shnei Ksuvim, Malamdim, Ein Malamdim. It's a trickier approach, but that's one approach. And then there's a second approach, which belongs to Rav Acha bar Yaakov, which is basically the starting assumption is that women are obligated in mitzvahs, essay, and positive commandments. And then it's just a question of what is going to be whittled away using the last pasuk in Parshas Bo. So what we're whittling away is tefillin and anything similar to tefillin, i.e., time-bound mitzvahs. Those are the two basic approaches. In terms of lo sasein, negative prohibitions, women are bound by almost all of them. The Gemara gave us three sources and the need for the three sources that took us from Lamed Hey to Lamed Hamed Aleph to Lamed Hamed Beis. And then the rest of today's daf is basically seeking a source for the three exceptions to this rule. Rule number three, that a bas kohen can go to and become tamei lameis. So how do we know that? The Gemara says that one's easy. B'nei Aaron v'lo b'nos Aaron. And bal takifu and bal tashkis, not the rounding of the corners. They're not bound by the prohibition of rounding of the corners and the shaving of a beard if they have one. So that became a little bit trickier. And that's where the Gemara spent most of the Amud Beis discussing.